All right, we're back to talk about thought leadership with Nicholas. So let's get started. In the last 4 weeks, what kind of content have we been working on?
Yeah, so on our last 4 weeks, we've been going through a lot of internal strategy thinking. So really making sure that the content that we produce across social media, our newsletter, and our blog content is aligned with our business goals. So far, we've gotten great results from it, but also that need for focus led us to mainly focus on our newsletter. If you are familiar with our newsletter, 08 Insights, we basically follow a very specific structure that at first sight looks very similar to what perhaps you see on other business newsletters, but that I think you'll be very interested to hear about. So our first section is usually just a blog post that we have produced, which usually comes from the ideation process that we discussed on our previous episode. So we talked about how we can add our own opinion to current conversations. We talked about how we can expand on arguments that even our competitors are mentioning. But we also talk about how we can always just analyze data points from our perspective. So that's the first section that we usually produce in our newsletter. But the second one, which is the one that I think that not many companies are using, it's simply to present different opinions that our individual members have. So there are many benefits to that. The first one being simply that you're putting a stake on the ground and perhaps that stake is not something that other people agree with. So there's thought leadership in that. But also, and this is an added benefit, you're allowing your readers to connect with your team on a more personal level, with their personalities, with their habits, with their way of speaking, with their hobbies. So it makes me think about a recent newsletter in which we actually talked about one of our members' experiences at Disneyland. So he went to Disneyland as the member of a PR team, and it was a two-day event with a big Fortune 500 company. And what happened was that he had all this information planned for the conversation and all these data to present them, to persuade them to invest more into PR. And then this guy from Google comes in and he basically says to the client that our team member wanted to persuade into getting more into PR. The Google guy says, if you invest $100,000 with us, that will lead to $1 million. Any questions? And that was the whole conversation. The way our team member interpreted, and it's something that he constantly says, it's basically you need to have the data necessary to solidify your case. And I think you could agree with me on that, Seth. I think part of these small stories that our different team members have around not having the data to back results are the same reason why 08 is so into data. Like, we not only are talking about data-driven decisions all the time, but we are always reporting our results. We are tracking every single movement that we make and always tying it to business results. And then, depending on the nature of the engagement, it could be like weekly, maybe it's a month. It's also very dependent on how the client likes it, but we're always reporting on the revenue that we're bringing to our clients. And I think it's just this stake on the ground that we're always putting about being data-driven, that is also fueled by these individual stories that our own team members have.
Yeah, I like that idea about storytelling in a newsletter. Sometimes it feels like maybe that's not appropriate if you have a really, I don't know, really dry or analytical newsletter. But for us, we're strategic, we're working with people, we're working with companies, we have stories to tell. So what do you think about the role of storytelling in newsletters? And how does that convey thought leadership?
I mean, I think in any form, whether it's a newsletter or blog content or video, I think storytelling is crucial. I think we've all heard about how the humans are story-driven creatures. We love stories. I think we have all heard about those. But I think the most important aspect of it is actually using them. Like this story, again, about our team member talking about his time at Disneyland, you don't really know what he's about to say. And eventually he hits you with, if you don't have the data necessary to back your case, you're going to lose money. And I think by embedding your advice with stories, you are much more likely to get a reader to get through the entire story that you're going to say. I think it's a common thing that we see in the marketing industry, in which all these companies are simply telling people what they should do. Like, you should do this. Like, you should invest in marketing. You should create 10 carousels on LinkedIn every single day. You should be on TikTok. You should be on Snapchat, even though no one uses it. You should be on Pinterest. You should be on Meta. You should be everywhere.
Yeah.
But perhaps you should. But the thing is that people don't really act because this advice doesn't feel relatable. You don't really know why you should do it. And perhaps you don't even know what it is that they are saying because the way they are saying it is not compelling. So storytelling is a fantastic way to actually add that little thing that your readers have to live with once they read your story. And it could be 100% business related, but presenting it a whole different and more compelling way.
Yeah, I love it. I think that's a good point when we're thinking about thought leadership. People still need to follow. You can't just lead, right? People need to follow your thought leadership, so to speak. So allowing people to see themselves in the thoughts that you're producing or the thought leadership content that you're producing is very important, for sure. Great. Now, let's dive a little bit deeper in how to create some of this content that we're talking about. We talked about storytelling, etc. But how does one actually go about writing it? And what are the steps and thought processes?
First of all, every single writer, I mean, again, even related to what I just said, I think it's very easy for us to find a path that works and maybe tell people that they should do something. Maybe that's what they should do. Maybe it's beneficial. But of course, every single writer has a different style. What I will say, though, is that we have definitely at OA find patterns that come from the world of just normal writing, let's say, that we have used across our thought leadership pieces to see great results from them. And I think they all go back to proper essay writing. So thought leadership at the end of the day is simply you want to be credible and you want to be persuasive. And I think one of the simplest ways to be persuasive is actually let's make a case for why the opposite opinion to the one you have is very strong. And that seems counterintuitive. So for example, O8 offers fractional CMO support. You are able to go in whichever stage of your company you're at, and we're able to place someone who has had that experience as a fractional CMO before and has perhaps grown teams, pivot from an industry to another, whatever it is that you need, you are able to add a fractional CMO to your team. So let's say that's the argument that we're trying to make. Then when it comes to thought leadership, what we would like to do is make an argument to why that's not the case. And it seems counterintuitive. Like, why would we want to tell people that they shouldn't hire a fractional CMO? Well, because at the end of the day, for us to be able to convince you of a thesis, we need to know the counter arguments to it. We need to know that perhaps that's not what they need. Perhaps people think that a fractional CMO, because they have less time, they will be unable to get results. And we need to say that in our articles, but that's not where we stop. So we have our thesis, hey, you should hire a fractional CMO. We need to tell people we understand the fractional CMOs have less time usually. So perhaps that's not what you need. But then we have to counter that. And there lies the secret of persuasiveness, being able to know the strongest counterargument that people have and then address it. How do we address it? For example, if we were writing this piece, we have data on the financial results that we've gotten to our clients. Perhaps our fractional CMO isn't working 40 hours a week. Maybe it's 20, maybe it's 30, but we're getting the same results. We're getting better results. And by showing those examples or those solutions to continuous counterarguments, we solidify our case. Again, we have data. And this is similar to storytelling, all about communication. Here we're talking about the contents of writing a thought leadership piece, but that's also something that we have to do on our sales calls. We have to say, hey, perhaps you need a fractional CMO. And I know you might not want one because it's Y and C, but here's the solution to that. It's all about persuasiveness.
I love that. And that made me think about slightly off topic, but related. You put together some guidelines for using ChatGPT. And one of the tactics you mentioned is kind of reversing the argument or asking the opposite of the thesis. Can you talk a little bit more about that and how you use that when either ideating or thinking about content for thought leadership?
It's very funny because, as you know, I'm a writer at heart. I love writing. I love art. I love design. I love fashion. So I think the common thing amongst us is we're not very happy about GPT sometimes. Like, we have this idea of like the soul, like this sort of things should come out of the soul. And sometimes you feel like that's not what's happening with ChatGPT. So in an effort to actually counter that and see if that's exactly what I thought and just appreciate the level of progress that we've gotten with AI, one day I just started playing with it. And I was thinking, what are some simple things that companies usually don't do that are hurting the way they produce thought leadership? And the first thing that came to mind was they are not writing persuasive arguments. They are not supporting their arguments. And the solution for that was very simple. And we already talked about that. You have to make sure that you know what the counter argument is and then basically provide a solution. So what I started doing was, let's see if I can create like a guide that our writers can use to create a persuasive argument, given that that's not the case on marketing writing. Like, marketing writers usually do this, do this, do this.
Yeah.
You don't know why. But right. That's kind of like how it goes for most writing online. And the guideline was very simple. Tell me what you want to say. So again, let's say what you want to say is, you should hire a fractional CMO. So that's as far as a regular marketing article would go. So what I did was, okay, let's expand this a little bit. So let's not only talk about fractional CMOs. Let's put ourselves in the position of a fictional reader. So for example, why should the CEO of a Series C startup want to hire a fractional CMO? So that's maybe a little bit more specific. So ChatGPT goes ahead and gives you a bunch of different reasons, which are actually very plausible. So you have that, but you don't want to stay like that. What I wanted to do next was, okay, now for each of these reasons why a Series C CEO should hire a fractional CMO, give me a counter argument. Like, why shouldn't they hire one? And I started getting all these different answers and actually like 1 to 2 counter arguments for each of the arguments. And then you are in an interesting position, because now all those things that you thought were enough to persuade readers to, in this case, hire a fractional CMO, like, you have a lot of reasons not to. So what I would do would be to, okay, ask ChatGPT to actually provide an answer to all of them. So now what you have is, in a 3-step process with ChatGPT, you basically have your thesis, you have your arguments, you have counter arguments, but you also have solutions for them. And of course, you don't want to stay there. Like, in this case, if you are a legit marketing agency, you can develop those arguments endlessly. Whenever we're writing our thought leadership pieces, if you scroll through our website, we're always referring to client where we're always talking from a perspective of actual experience. We're very detailed. However, all of those counter arguments that we could be addressing, we could have used ChatGPT to help us develop those. It takes 2 minutes and it makes for such a more persuasive article. And, you know, ChatGPT, it's free. So there's no reason not to use it.
Absolutely. That's a great point. And, you know, I think maybe there's some conception out there that ChatGPT is only for creating boring SEO stuffed articles, but you can actually use it for thought leadership, you know, just as a heuristic or a shortcut for improving your thinking or facilitating your thinking on a topic. I love it.
Like, an additional thing on that, Seth, I don't know if I send this to you. I nerd out about different things all the time, but you can actually have ChatGPT have a debate with itself. So you can actually just have ChatGPT act as 2 different AIs and ask it to have a debate on whether fractional CMOs are a thing for Series C startups. And it would just go talking to itself over and over again. And then you have all that thinking that ChatGPT did. You can reflect on it and then just go in and write the article yourself. So you touch on this crucial point. ChatGPT is not necessarily, it can be an output form, but it can also be a way of just helping your thinking.
Yes, I love it. So interesting, as always, Nicholas. Thank you so much. Really good conversation today, and look forward to chatting again next time. Take care, everyone.
See you next time. Thank you all.
See you next time. Bye.